sport or a spectator sport. So if there are things that you're confused about, you just need to ask. If you're not understanding something, you just need to ask. If you stay confused, that's only going to hurt you. The way that I teach and the way that I touch, you need to know your drugs and you need to know your drug interactions. The way that I focus questions, especially on exams, the exams are short answer or case study exclusively. That's just the way that it is. And so to do well on the exams means you really got to know your drugs. So you really need to pay attention to the diseases, understand when you want to use one drug versus another drug. And this is what you're going to have to do as a pharmacist anyway. So does it take more time to study this way? Absolutely, because I'm not going to test you on something that's like a word association thing, or, you know, when there's SAR, I'll point out SAR, but we're not going to sit there and like just look at structures all day. We're going to really talk about the drugs. We're going to learn about the drugs. We're going to say why you would want to use this, why you want to use that one, etc. So I want you to focus your attention studying that way. It's just a different way to think about it, but I could very well give you a case study and say, okay, you have a patient, suffers from migraines, they're on this, this, and this. This is their health history. All right, this is your limited formulary you have to choose from. Which would you choose and why? Okay, very straightforward, standard type of question. So to answer the question, you have to really understand, obviously, which drugs are in the formulary, understand when you would want to take one versus another, what are the drawbacks, side effects, stuff like that. So just a different way of thinking about it, so you have to basically put the big picture together. So it boils down to really knowing your drugs well, which is really going to help you as a pharmacist anyway. So, for example, learning is definitely not a spectator sport. You have to be actively asking questions and involved. If you're confused, then your hand should go up. And if you have a question, probably somebody else has a question. No big deal. So you just have to ask. I mean, for example, my sister, she flies she has her pilot license thing, and she told me a long time ago, oh, I want to take you up. It's so pretty. I'll show you all the leaves and stuff in the fall. And I'm like, yeah, not yet. I'd rather have you be insurance certified and stuff like that. And she's like, please. And I'm like, how do you think JFK Jr. died? He was instrument rated and bad weather came and blah, blah, blah. And so, meaning I would want somebody to really understand their stuff before I risk my life, even if it is my own sister, traveling on a plane. Well, you can say the same thing as a pharmacist. You guys, I would want you to really know your stuff if I'm going to put my life or somebody else's life in your hands. So, you know, I do make you know your drugs, and it's for your own benefit, and I think that you'll be surprised how much you'll retain it. But it's going to take a little bit more studying, I'll tell you, to really know your drugs well, but it's for your benefit. Does anybody have any questions? Ready to go? All right. We're going to start with migraines. And I'm going to start out by teaching you some of the older migraine medications that were used, and then we'll get to triptans. But, another thing. Don't cram for this material. Make sure you learn the material as you go. Because if you try and cram it in at the last minute, it's not going to work. All right. So anyway, erga alkaloids is like the older type of medications that are used to treat migraines. And when we talk about migraines, you have to think about it. If I ask you a question on migraines, or if somebody, a patient, asks you for help with migraines, you can't separate it based on, okay, so triptans are what I see mostly dispensed, so what triptans are available? You can't do that. You can't limit yourself. You have to say, okay, I know we have ergots that are still dispensed, not as nearly as much, but they're still available. People use them. They respond very well to them. We also have triptans. We also have some anti-epileptic drugs that are used for migraines as well, and some other types of medications that are useful for migraines as well. We'll get to those. So what I want to tell you is that we will be talking about migraine with ergot alkaloids, with triptans, and even with anti-epileptic epileptic drugs. So when you're studying, it's helpful for you to list your drugs in tablet-wise, right? So you'll get the bulk of most of the drugs when we talk about ergots and triptans. But when we talk about epilepsy, you'll also get a handful of drugs that are useful there. So when you think about counseling somebody for migraines, you have to think about everything. What are your bag of tricks? Or what is your formulary? What are the drugs we have to use to try and treat people with migraines? So just keep that in mind. All right. So the ergot alkaloids are the oldest, and this is the basic pharmacopore that they're going to have. They have this tetracyclic kind of ring to them. But they're very large. They have a lot of solubility problems. They have a lot of side effects. And so they work primarily through causing a lot of vasoconstriction. And so because they do this, what types of patients might be not ideal for them, I guess? Hypertension? Who else? What do you think? Just hypertensive people? What about diabetics? Would this be a good category for them? What about people with a history of stroke? Would this be a good category for them? No? What about obesity? It's the number one epidemic right now. Would this be a good category for them? Why not? What do you know about obesity? What types of problems are associated with obesity? Hypertension, high cholesterol, cardiovascular disease, yeah, lots of things. So we call those more of our high-risk patients, and so you got to be careful who you put them on because of the extreme vasoconstrictive properties. Now later, what they figured out is that, okay, we don't actually need C and D ring. I mean, this is kind of extra, but they didn't realize that until later. We isolated our ergot derivatives from natural products. Later they figured out that this indole ring here is all they really need, and so this is your basic pharmacopore that's required. They didn't realize it completely with the ergot alkaloids, but with the triptans, that's what they're going to basically build upon. So this is the basic pharmacopore for the triptans. This is what you're going to see for all the ergot alkaloid derivatives. But they're going to all work, all the ergot derivatives work the same by constricting blood vessels during a migraine attack. Some of them are going to constrict them more, some of them are going to constrict them less. So, what the heck is ergot alkaloids? Well, they were isolated from actually a fungus, and we will talk about Claviceps purpurea, which this is the fungus that we isolated the ergot alkaloids from. But migraine attacks, you really need to understand your patient. Listen to your patient first before you figure out what medications are going to be good for them. Some people suffer from very long migraine attacks. Some people suffer from relatively shorter migraine attacks. Some people suffer from frequent migraines. Some people suffer from maybe a migraine once a year, twice a year. Migraine attacks are often associated with what types of symptoms? Nausea? Light sensitivity? What else? Pain, all right, that's what we're trying to treat, yep. Vomiting, some visual disturbances, lots of things, okay? So we're gonna try and treat them and pay attention as we go through. Some medications will have a better effect of this than others. All right, from a headache standpoint, we kind of categorize headaches as primary or secondary. So with primary, they kind of lack identifiable cause, if you will. And so with migraine attacks, we oftentimes don't know really what's causing them. We try and deduce from things that people are exposed to or environments. But migraines would fall into this category. Secondary headaches are associated with a variety of causes. So, for example, a brain tumor on your brain is causing migraines. We know what the cause is that's actually causing it, so that would be like a secondary headache. people to know what kind of headaches you're dealing with. So, what's triggers? Triggers are various people that suffer from migraines. Something or some activity could actually bring on the migraine. Well, we know some common triggers, so we kind of put them together in a list, but there's a lot of things that even aren't on this list. Sometimes stress can bring on migraines with some people. You'll never completely get away stress, I guess, unless you want to become Buddhist and live in a, like a, what do you call that? What do they live in? Yeah, there you go. I guess they don't have any stress, but normal people undergo stress, so people that, for example, have suffered from migraines that are brought on by stress, try and figure out ways to decrease stress. Oral contraceptives, I call them OCs. They are very, very common to bringing on migraines. And so certain types of odors could bring on migraines. Monosodium glutamate, we know that this is in a lot of broths, and you find it in a lot of Chinese food, that can bring on migraines. Alcohol can bring on migraines. There's lots of different things that can. Vasodilating agents can bring on migraines, like nitrates and nitrites. The nitrites they add to meat to kind of give them a little bit more of a pink color, and that can sometimes bring on a migraine. Why is that? Why does that make sense? So when you hear me say that, you should ask, well, why, Dr. Ranju? Like, that makes no sense to me, right? So always ask yourself why and how, right? Because this is how I get you to think. You asking questions will actually help you at an exam, because if you start thinking that way, you're already going to train your brain. So you tell me that vasodilating agents can help or can oftentimes bring on a migraine, but how, why does that make sense? Well, we're going to learn about ergot alkaloids, right? And how do they work primarily? Okay, so vasodilating agents can bring on a migraine, right? And so that's the reason why. Anything that's kind of vasodilating can sometimes lead to migraines oftentimes. So these guys are going to work through vasoconstriction to try and alleviate it. Actually, I thought that I put this on the list, but there's actually caffeine. That overconsumption of caffeine can also bring on migraines. It can also lead to what is known as rebound migraines. But then you might think to yourself, well, later on, Dr. Bancho, you're going to teach us about drugs that are mixed with caffeine. So why the heck would you mix something that's an initiator for possibly a migraine? You know, that doesn't, with a drug, that doesn't make any sense. Well, actually, caffeine can help increase the absorption of some of these drugs, because remember, when we looked at the basic pharma before for the ergot derivatives, you have a very large tetracyclic ring structure. They have a lot of problems with, guess what? Absorption. So a limited amount of caffeine can actually increase the absorption. Too much caffeine, you usually won't see beyond 100 milligrams being mixed with the doses. When you exceed that, then it often can lead to rebound headaches and stuff like that. So we're going to talk more about that. All right, let's talk about this fungus, Claviceps purpurea. This fungus can infect all types of grain products, like rye, wheat, barley, etc. So anytime you have a farmer that wants to sell these grain products, they have to actually get their grains inspected, because guess what they're looking for? This fungus, right? Claviceps purpurea. Because if it was infected, could you actually sell this? No. And what's the FDA looking for? Why would they be worried about this? Or the Department of Agriculture? Side effects, because what would people experience? Vasoconstriction. Okay, extreme vasoconstriction. So if the grains are tested and if it comes back like more than 0.3% or something like that, then they're rejected. So farmers go to great lengths to make sure their fields are not infected, because otherwise they won't get any return on their investment. Because everybody, you're worried about ergot toxicity. So this is the basic lifestyle. So it's cyclic, so meaning you have, let's say that you have your wheat product. If a spore landed on your wheat, if you will, it'll kind of develop into what is known as a florette. And this is just like a honeydew substance, and guess what? It's very sweet, and it attracts lots of insects, and guess what insects love to do? Pick it up and land on lots of other things and infect other things because it's full of spores. So that's what the insects are attracted to, this really sweet-smelling stuff, honeydew kind of stuff, and then it starts infecting lots of other things. Also, the spores can get taken up in the wind, and they can infect other plants, etc. So, one of the techniques farmers actually use is crop rotation, and they will, do you know what I mean when I say crop rotation? Okay. So they'll use crop rotation because these spores, if they land to the soil, they can survive one winter. That's it. Okay? Then they will die. So as long as you, the next year, plant something besides your grain products in that field, you'll be okay. Because if you didn't, the next spring, these spores kind of develop, and these spores, well, this is just what the fungus looks like. You develop these hard body sclerotia, what they're known as. So in these sclerotia is where you have your herbal alkaloids. So if you're making grains or taking all the wheat and stuff off of it, this sclerotia gets mixed in there and using your products, and this is what causes the extreme vasoconstriction. These are the spores, that the mushroom-like bodies that will develop in the springtime. And so if it lasts, or if it cycles through and it develops in the springtime, these spores can release lots of things into the wind and the air and affect other products. All right, so what do they do to try to prevent this? Crop rotation is the best because it's the cheapest, right? They could actually clean their seeds, but realistically, does this make much sense? You drive down the road, you see fields and fields of like grain or barley or something. This makes no sense because it would be very costly and time-consuming, and they wouldn't want to do it. So you could technically clean your seeds, but that's really not what's going to be used. Crop rotation is by far the best. So what happens if you do get toxicity to this? So you're consuming products that have a lot of this stuff in them. Well, the symptoms is, you know that these alkaloids produce extreme vasoconstriction. So it oftentimes leads to gangrene, and especially in the, and kind of like your limbs become mummified, because guess what happens to the blood flow? It gets cut off. So, Your extremities become kind of black and mummified, and guess what's eventually going to have to happen if you want to stay in the land of the living? Right. And have to cut them off. So when you do get this, people that experience toxicity experience severe burning sensations in their limbs. They can sometimes have hallucinations. They can get convulsions. Ergot alkaloids cause a lot of uterine contraction, so it's very, very dangerous for pregnant females to be exposed to it. So ergot toxicity is also going to be called holy fire. These are words that kind of describe all the same thing. Ergot toxicity, holy fire, or sometimes called St. Anthony's fire. Alright, holy fire, because of the extreme pain that's associated with it and the burning sensation. Ergot toxicity, because obviously they're ergot alkaloids. And then St. Anthony's fire, because guess what? Guess why? If you had to guess, why the heck would they call it St. Anthony's fire? Well, who the heck is St. Anthony? Are you serious? Nobody knows who St. Anthony is? Or saint somebody? What's a saint? All right. I'm sure there's someone in here that's Catholic, right? You guys are just being shy. You don't need to be shy, right? So they would pray to St. Anthony, right? And they would pray that St. Anthony would, they would go to the shrine, and this shrine was in France. And they would travel to the shrine, and they would pray and pray to St. Anthony, please heal me from this toxicity. And then suddenly, they would get better. So, was it St. Anthony? Let's use our scientific reasoning here. Is it St. Anthony that cured them? Well, what do you think? Does it make sense? Well, what do you think? How many people think St. Anthony cured them?
they were exposed to less of their loved.
Yeah, because they're traveling to St. Anthony. So they're when they're experiencing toxicity, they're consuming products made of these grain products in contaminated areas, right? So when they traveled to this shrine in France, it wasn't a contaminated region. So when they bought and ate their products, they weren't contaminated with organ alkaloids, so of course they're going to get better. So, but the name stuck, and so that's why it's also called St. Anthony's Fire. So they actually got relief, not because they believed they were praying to St. Anthony, but because they were consuming products not contaminated. All right, there's phases of a migraine. There's what is known as a prodrome period, and this can actually, people that are very in tune with their bodies can actually sense when they're having a migraine or when a migraine is going to come on. It can happen anywhere from hours to days before a migraine. There's symptoms associated with it. What about 20% of migraine sufferers experiences what is known as an aura? You guys ever heard of this? Okay. So an aura is just a visual disturbance in their field. So you could be writing your notes, going along perfectly, then all of a sudden you start experiencing like blotches out of your visual field or horizontal lines, etc. That's kind of an indicator that migraine attack is coming on. This oftentimes gets brought on roughly between 15, 20, maybe 25 minutes before the actual migraine hits. So for the lucky people, I mean, you're not lucky, obviously, if you experience migraines, but if you do experience migraines, if you do get aura, that is actually very lucky, because that is the best time to take medication to treat your migraine, because you're going to give it time to, you know that your migraine is going to express itself in about 20, 25 minutes or so, and so if you take your medication right away, you're going to get the best control of it, and you won't be in as much pain. But unfortunately, not everybody experiences this before the migraine actually expresses itself. After a migraine, in your postterm period, people usually feel very tired, they're exhausted, their nerves are very sensitive, so oftentimes they'll just sleep because they're just very, very tired. A lot of migraines bring on a lot of nausea, vomiting, sound sensitivities, light sensitivities, etc. So the problem was, before we had triptans, trying to treat a migraine meant that a lot of people are going to either have to leave work because they can't go back to work being that sick and experiencing the symptoms of the painful experience of a migraine. And so actually billions and billions of dollars are lost per year because of people suffering from migraines. So there's a big market because 10 to 15% of the population suffers from migraines. And so there's lots of things that can actually be used to try and alleviate this. Now, I'm going to mention the first thing that most people want to resort to are your NSAIDs. This is usually not recommended for a number of reasons, because your NSAIDs are not truly going to be effective for a migraine attack. They're not, unless you suffer from like a very, very mild migraine attack. And then maybe Excedrin migraine, if you look at the clinical research on products like that, they do show some effectiveness for very, very mild migraines. People that truly suffer from migraines, though, are not going to get any relief from NSAIDs. And so what's going to happen is they're just going to keep popping up, oh, this is so painful, I need relief. And it's because not everybody's on prescription medication to control their migraines. So what this develops, if you will, is rebound headaches. Do you know what a rebound headache is? It's another headache that comes on oftentimes even after your migraine, and it can be almost just as painful as your migraine. Now, if you're going to suffer through a migraine attack, do you think you're going to want to have to suffer through a rebound attack? No, but the more frequent administration of NSAIDs brings on frequent rebound headaches. So this is actually very common with a lot of people that suffer from migraines because they overuse NSAIDs. Or they overuse products known as Vicodin. All right, there's a lot of people that use, or a fair number of people that use Vicodin for their control, their migraines. And initially, it will work. It'll get the migraines under control. But overuse of even those products will bring on rebound headaches, and then it's not going to work at all. So it is not recommended to use long-term types of products like that, because it'll bring on rebound headaches in a heartbeat. So then we have our herbal derivatives. We'll get into triptans later. But Excedrin migraine is probably one of the only ones that's useful for treating for the people that suffer from migraines. Remember, acetaminophen. What types of people are going to pick acetaminophen to try and alleviate their mild migraines? What types of patients do you want to make sure you're careful about?
People with hepatic impairment.
Okay, hepatic impairment or alcoholics, right? Because we learn about how that induces your CYP2E enzyme, and so you'll lead to more toxicity with that, so be careful with that. Alright. Now, you can't really talk about migraines without getting into some of your herbal remedies that are used. Okay, this is a big field right now, and a lot of people take a lot of supplements. That's why when you counsel people for migraines, you always have to ask, what products, period, do you take? I mean, you're talking vitamins, you're talking anything OTC, prescription, etc. Because most people think out there, okay, what drugs are you taking right now? They just think prescription medication. They're not thinking OTCs, they're not thinking herbals, they're not thinking vitamins, but you need to know this to help them. Magnesium oxide, this is a very common one, and they'll usually take between 400 or 500 milligrams per day. The reason is because they've studied migraines and they have found that magnesium levels seem to drop before and after a migraine attack. So they think that if you can supplement with magnesium, you can try and keep it at more of a homeostatic level so then you can deter migraines. Some people get relief with this. Another one is vitamin B2. This can reduce the frequency of mild migraines. Your omega-3s, remember when we learned about this in biochemistry? We talked about omega-6s versus omega-3s and how the American diet is horrible, like we're like 20 to 30 omega-6 to omega-3s, and how you want to be roughly anywhere between 1:1 to 4:1 for omega-6 to omega-3. Remember, omega-3, it serves as a more preventative measure for, guess what? What did we talk about? Atherosclerosis. Remember what else? Inflammatory diseases, autoimmune diseases. Do you think inflammation is involved in migraine? Yeah. That's why some of the products we're going to talk about work by different mechanisms, one being that targets inflammation. So because if you supplement with omega-3, you're increasing your omega-3s, and so you can try and ward off or aid in inflammatory processes that are involved with migraines. Feverfew, this is a big one. This is probably the most frequently used herbal supplement for migraines, and it helps prevent migraines. People have to be on this, though, for weeks and weeks. You can't just pop a Feverfew and say, okay, it's going to ward off my migraines. So you might not see effects for weeks. There are people that don't see any effects, but it does show clinical significance in reducing the severity and duration of migraines. You do not want to use Feverfew if you're pregnant. That's a big no-no. It can induce an abortion. And there's lots of different products you can take. Like they have the Feverfew and teas, but it's not recommended to really do that because it causes mouth ulceration, so not really good. And if you want to take your patient off Feverfew, you want to slowly titrate them off Feverfew. Don't just say, okay, stop taking that abruptly, because it can lead to rebound headaches and a lot of problems. The only other big kind of red flag of Feverfew I would say right now is don't take Feverfew with anticoagulants. That's a big drug interaction with that one. All right, so the only other one I want to point out here is naproxen here. And so naproxen, people will also tend to grab when they're suffering from a migraine. Typically, they might want to choose like 700 milligrams or more. And the problem with naproxen is, remember, the National Institute of Health came out a few years ago ago, and if you keep up with the news and the media, they said that higher doses and chronic uses of naproxen are associated with higher risks of what? Heart attacks and strokes. So, let's say you're predisposed for a health history of heart attacks, right? Hopefully not, but if you were, might naproxen be one you want to choose? No, so just be cautious about that. All right, there are different forms of ergotism, convulsive form, gangrenous form, and a mixture of the two known as hallucinogenic. Actually, you remember when you were, I think they talked about this in high school, the Salem witch trials, you remember that? And you thought, and it was a lot of these crazy women, they thought they burned them at the stake and stuff because they thought they were witches, right? Well, actually, the research has gone back and they found that actually they truly believe that these people had hallucinogenic forms of ergotoxicity, and that's what was causing their crazy behavior. And like the History Channel and lots of other types of people have gone back to do that research, and so it's actually interesting. Okay, so when we look at the structures, serotonin is involved. You guys know what serotonin is, right? At this point, hopefully? Okay. So serotonin is, you know, one of our baby boom neurotransmitters. It's associated with vasoconstriction, vasodilation, lots of things, anxiety, sleep, etc. We're going to try and mimic our structures to bind to various serotonin receptor subtypes. And our lysergic acid derivatives, so notice our basic structure here, tetracyclic ring structure. Lysergic acid actually is an analog to LSD. So you might think, LSD, that can actually help with migraines. Actually, it can. And they obviously, you don't want to take LSD to treat your migraines. So we modify the structure, but it is a lysergic acid derivative. Tryptophan is needed, and you guys know tryptophan is an aromatic, very essential amino acid, is needed in order to form serotonin. And obviously, you need adequate concentrations of serotonin. So if you inhibited, for example, the enzyme here, you would have decreased serotonin levels, which would affect your vasodilation and vasoconstriction properties. Alright, so monoamine oxidase is involved in the deamination, if you will, and metabolism of serotonin. And so monoamine oxidase inhibitors will interfere with this normal metabolism. And so that's why as we go through the discussion of migraine treatments, you're going to hear whether you should avoid monoamine oxidase inhibitors or if you can take it with a monoamine oxidase inhibitor. So we're going to talk about that a lot. Melatonin, serotonin can also be converted into melatonin. And melatonin is a very important hormone that's involved in a lot of different processes that we function to. Well, you might think, how the heck does melatonin affect anything? Well, remember how we synthesize serotonin from tryptophan. So if you have very low levels of tryptophan, what are your levels of serotonin going to be like? Very low. What are your levels of melatonin going to be like? Exactly. That's why when we talk in biochemistry about anorexia and when they're not consuming any food, they're not consuming any aromatic amino acids, that's affecting a lot of processes. That's why they oftentimes tend to be depressed and down. All right. Now, has Dr. Holt gone through the basic mechanism for presynaptic, postsynaptic membranes when your neurotransmitters get released. Do you guys know this basic mechanism? So like the vesicles that have your serotonin or dopamine in them, and they move and they get released in the presynaptic cleft and how they bind to these receptors. Did you cover any of that? Okay, because we're going to be talking about specific serotonin receptors, and so it's good for you to have some idea in your head about what's going on with neurons and neural communication. All right, come and see me if you don't really understand that well, and I'd be happy to go through it with you. Okay, there are uses for lots of different types of ergot derivatives, and so they're not just going to be for migraine. We're going to talk a lot about migraine. They can also be used to stop excessive bleeding. Well, you can have excessive bleeding in after, for example, a baby delivery, you could still have excessive types of bleeding, and what you could use ergot derivatives to try and stop this and get it under control, because it'll cause the muscles of the uterus to contract and it'll help. They used to use ergot derivatives because it stimulated the contractions of the uterus. They used to use it as what? Guess what? An inducer, yeah. But the problem with that is the side effects don't outweigh the benefits of doing that now. We have much safer drugs out there. Because the problem was is they cause extreme vasoconstriction, that you saw a severely increased number of stillbirths that were born, and also it cut off their oxygen supply for longer periods of time. So it's not really used to induce labor anymore, but it is used very commonly by your OB gyns to stop excessive bleeding. All right, there's two families of ergot alkaloids. So we have our tetracyclic ergoline derivatives. We have ones that fall into this category. We also have some peptide alkaloids, and we're going to talk about some that fall into this category. It's just differences in their structure and how they're actually synthesized. All right, lysergic acid, this is the basic structure here. And all ergot alkaloids are going to resemble this. This little double bond here is very important, because if you did away with this, it would actually cause more vasodilation, which would kind of eliminate the effects of your ergot derivatives. But all of them are very, very important for trying to cause the vasoconstriction. This is lysergic acid. The reason we talk about this is because this is kind of your building block for all your ergot alkaloid derivatives that are derived from tryptophan. So if you look at this slide, you don't need to know this slide, because most of them are actually talking about tryptans, which we're going to talk about, and it's not even fully encompassive of all the ergot alkaloids that's used. What I want to point out here is when you look at old medications versus new medications, you see this tetracyclic ring structure here. Some of them are peptide derivatives, some of them are not, but they're very, very large molecules. Have a lot of side effects. They're going to undergo a lot of metabolism because they're very lipophilic. They're very large. And so things that undergo more metabolism, you generally see more drug interactions and side effects. Yeah, so you're going to see more side effects and drug interactions with ergot derivatives than you will your tryptan category, which are much smaller and way more selective than your ergot derivatives. All right, this is just LSD. Okay, some other ergot alkaloids. Ergonovine, this is very commonly used in the ergot field. Methyl ergonovine, these two are very, very similar, and they're also very commonly used to stop excessive bleeding. SAMSERT or methysergid is probably your weakest ergot alkaloid vasoconstrictor. So we all know the ergot alkaloids cause vasoconstriction, but the degree to which they do it is different. SAMSERT is going to be our weakest vasoconstrictor. From a pregnancy category, would you recommend a pregnant female use any of the ergot derivatives? No, it's category X. And you got to be careful about what types of patients do experience it. But SAMSERT, if you look at structurally going on, we rarely substitute on our pharmacophore. As Dr. Love said, she usually focuses a lot on pharmacophores. As she drilled through your head, you usually don't mess around with the pharmacophore structurally, because what happens? Remember, I have horrible hearing and can't hear anything. What happens? You lose your activity oftentimes. So you don't really mess with your pharmacophore. Ergonovine doesn't do it, because you're looking here more at the indole. It's still tetracyclic, but this is kind of what's going on here. Methyl ergonovine doesn't, but then SAMSERT, you see a methylation on the amine here of your indole. And so that loses a lot of your vasoconstrictive effects. Still has some effects, just not as good. So it enormously changes the effect of the drug. All right, if all these drugs cause vasoconstriction, what types of medications would you want your patients to avoid if they're going to be taking an ergot derivative? you want them to be on that one? No, because the effects could be additive. Why do you want them on a narcotic? What do you think? No, you don't want them on a narcotic either. All right, so just be very careful of that. Anything, the effects could be additive. All right, one thing that's interesting is that women experience way more migraines than men. About 75% of migraine sufferers are actually women, and the rest of them are men. And the one factor that researchers have kind of traced back to the reason is what? What do women have that men don't have a lot of? Estrogen, right? It doesn't mean that we as women can get away from that, right? We can't say, okay, we just want to be men now because we don't want to experience migraines. No, estrogen is a very important hormone, we all know, but it's also a trigger of migraines. That's why 75% of the migraine sufferers are women. Now, the one thing I do want to point out about women and migraines is there is something called menstrual migraines. Okay, this is really key and critical because actually a fair number of women suffer from this thing called menstrual migraines. So what I mean by menstrual migraines is they tend to get their migraines around what? Their menstrual period, okay? Because we know that the hormones are fluctuating. So these types of migraines are very, very severe, and they last a long time. So, for example, I knew somebody that I still know somebody. She's a good friend of mine, actually. And she was on Fiorasat, which you guys don't know what that is yet, but we'll talk about it. And she suffers from menstrual migraines. And she was like, I know you're in pharmacy. I need to ask you a question, but, you know, I was wondering if you might be able to give a recommendation. I'm like, what's going on? What are you taking? She told me what she's taking. I'm like, who's your physician? They're a moron. Who would put you on that? Like, just a complete idiot. And I'm like, no wonder you're getting no relief. They had her on Vicodin for long term. She was taking Vicodin for like 5 years. I'm sorry, ridiculous. No wonder you're getting additional migraines. And then they had her on Fiorasat, which I'll teach you about, but it's only useful for very mild migraines, very mild pain. So if she's experiencing menstrual migraines, it's not going to touch it, okay? So I said there's only specific drugs that are out there that are effective for menstrual migraines, which she wasn't on one, and I gave her the best recommendation of one. I said, no, go tell your physician to put you on this. So she did. She comes back and says, he's never heard of it. I'm like, are you serious? Like, this is just, this is ridiculous. Which, I'm not going to tell you which drug because I haven't taught you that one yet. You'll be like, what? So then, I'm like, she came back and said he hasn't heard of it. I'm like, he is a complete moron. Go change physicians. And she listened to me, luckily. And she did. And then I said, all right, these are the only ones that are going to be useful. I said, this is my number one recommendation, number two recommendation. And I said, this is how you have to talk to the physician, you know. Went through the whole, rundown. And then so she went, and her physician's like, where does this stuff come from? He's like, who are you? And he's like, well, I have a neighbor that's, and so she went through. Anyway, he said, she's right on. This is what I would recommend. Not to toot my own horn, but she came back, and she said, oh my goodness, I'm in heaven now. Oh, this drug works so great. But the downside of it is, she complained to her physician, the stupid physician, for years about her residual pain and how it's not getting under control. And he's probably thinking she's some crazy lady or something, when she's not crazy. He didn't even know what the stinking drug was. And so, and it worked perfectly. So now she's like, I will never go to any other drug. This works perfectly. So, menstrual migraines, they're longer, they're more severe, and there's only certain drugs that are going to be effective for that. But you have a fair number of females that suffer from those, and so you want to make sure how to counsel them and what to tell them to take. Alright, rebound headaches. So rebound headaches are caused from overuse of your analgesics, simple analgesics that can be used. They can be brought on by overuse of narcotics. And they can also be brought on by just certain medications. Have you guys ever heard, I know we haven't talked about triptans yet, but have you ever heard of Imitrex? Okay, this is not really a good drug. I mean, if you look at it, I don't highly recommend it, only in certain circumstances, because one of the biggest drawbacks of it is it causes 46% headache recurrence. So 46% of the patients that take it get a rebound headache. Is this acceptable? Do you think that's acceptable? Sorry, Harry, you'll have a 50% chance almost of experiencing a rebound headache. I wouldn't want to hear that if I suffer from migraines. So sometimes your drugs can actually initiate a rebound headache. And you need to know your patients to know whether this is acceptable. Let's say you have a patient like my friend down the road that experiences rebound headaches like it's nobody's business. Would you maybe want to put her on a drug that has a higher incidence of rebound headaches? No, you're going to choose a drug that has a very low expression of rebound headaches because she's already predisposed to expressing rebound headaches and she does not want to have to suffer through these. Whereas you might have somebody else that really doesn't have any problems. You can't, everybody's not a cookie cutter. Meaning you can't put everybody in one box and say they're going to act the same. Some people just experience different. You have to tailor your treatment to the patient. Find out what your patient wants. For example, do they suffer acute migraines? Okay, are they suffering very long migraines? A lot of your migraine medication, the half-life is very short, so you have to redose them a lot, but there's always a maximum limit that they can get to. So you might say to your patient, okay, would you rather have the drug take a little bit longer to go into effect, but it has a really long half-life, so it'll sustain you for a really long time? Well, I guarantee you anybody that suffers from very long migraines, they'll probably suffer through a little bit of pain for it to act, and then it'll last a long time. Whereas that might not work for somebody that has acute migraines that don't last that long. They might think, well, my migraine only lasts about 4 hours or so. That doesn't mean as much to me. I want something that's going to act right now, like ASAP. So you might not recommend something like that. So rebound headaches, keep in mind, can be brought in by a number of factors, and you got to be careful. So don't overuse these types of products, and oftentimes this is what people do. All right, another type of headache that I call cluster migraines. All right, so let's say you have your migraine spectrum, if you will. So this is 0 to 10, all right, from a pain standpoint. Let's call 10 our most severe, okay? 0, you don't have a migraine, and then obviously going up. Cluster migraines are 10, okay? Your most severe. And so we usually describe migraines are they clusters, are they throbbing headaches, or are they just migraines? And so cluster headaches are very, very painful, throbbing migraines. And they actually, you can suffer from migraines and you can go through periods where you get clusters, multiple clusters, then you can go through periods where you're fine. Then the clusters can come back. They can come and go. And so you're not just going to have like clusters. You can have migraines with clusters. That's very common. And actually what brings on the clusters is still unknown. They don't know a lot about it, but they do know that men experience them more than women. And if you have a history of smoking, that you will typically experience more clusters than if you didn't. And it often, these clusters often occur right behind your eyeball, and it's very throbbing, and you just feel like your eyes just kind of want to pop out, and it's very, very painful. And the onset is very, very fast. Some people respond well to 100% oxygen, and so you'll sometimes see that happening, but very agonizing. They're looking a lot at serotonin with cluster migraines and trying to figure out if supplementation and modification can actually help. All right, let's move on. Tension headaches, these are mild. They tend to be worse in certain times of the day. Cervogenic headaches are the headaches you usually get from bad posture, whiplash, stuff like that. Sinus headaches, everybody knows what sinus headaches is, so we're not going to talk about that. So I'll just briefly talk about the other types of migraines. All right, this is just the three-dimensional kind of structure. Well, not really three-dimensional, but you can see what it looks like of serotonin, and then this is lysergic acid and how it's much larger. They're both going to bind to the same receptors. So they're trying to bind to our serotonin receptors. This is your basic pharmacophore for more your triptans, but remember you do see it with your ERK derivatives, but you also see here's your indole, but you also have these other two rings here. Alright, ergotamine is the very first one we're going to talk about. And this is also used to stop postpartum bleeding. Ergotamine can also be used to treat migraine attacks. The most common side effects you'll see from ergotamine, actually a lot, almost all your ERK derivatives, you'll see nausea and vomiting and fatigue. So when I say nausea, vomiting, fatigue, you can pretty much say that's going to happen with all your ERK derivatives. If you take this drug, though, early on in your attack, it's going to be way more effective than if you wait for your migraine to be expressed. And it's a very strong uterine stimulant, like most of your ERK derivatives, so obviously you don't ever want to give it to somebody that's pregnant. And it has a very high degree of metabolism because it's so lipophilic and it's so susceptible to enzyme degradation. Ergotamine is one of the ones that's often mixed with caffeine. That's why we have Caffergat, which I think I give you towards the end, and show you how it's mixed with caffeine to increase the absorption of the drug. And so more of it can get to the site of action and elicit its effect. Remember your high-risk patients. We talked about those. You're not going to obviously want to give any ergotamine, to be honest, to any of those. All right. And there's lots of different forms that you can give this in. All right, we're going to pick up here.